Welcome back to Gentlemen Prefer Bonds. I'm Will Daniel.
And I'm Will Schlick.
And I'm Max Wilcox.
Tonight, we're continuing our series of films that feel indebted to James Bond in some way, and talking about 1994's blockbuster True Lies, written and directed by James Cameron, based on 1991 French farce La Totale. This movie opened July 15th, 1994, from a budget of $115 million, grossed a worldwide total of $378 million, which made it the third most successful movie of 94, behind Lion King and Forrest Gump. I only saw this movie, at least in its entirety, I think 2 years ago or so. What about you guys? Did you watch it growing up?
I did. I watched it one time, I think, in like the 7th or 8th grade. I had a friend that really liked it, and I was like, oh, we should watch this. Yeah. Didn't remember a lot of it.
Did your friend like it?
Until I watched
it. Did your friend really like it?
He really liked it. He thought it was like the greatest movie ever.
I have a feeling that all of us saw it at a certain, not all of us, obviously, but most of us saw it at a certain age, because it was a movie that was in people's homes that had a certain scene.
There's definitely some,
that was it rolled into the mix.
Puberty acceleration for that's on the table for the scene we're all thinking of there. I wish I'd seen this when I was 12 or something. I probably would have loved it. It's James Cameron, of course, so really love the action. Really don't care for the second act of this movie, which you could pretty much cut out. Yeah, the whole thing kind of feels like a victory lap for him and Arnold after T2, where it's like the enormous success of that. We can kind of do whatever we want. Cameron must have liked the French movie and just like, hey, I've never seen like a horse chase a motorcycle through a fancy hotel before. Like, that would be fun to do.
And
I wonder
never
if Jamie Lee Curtis will almost be naked in this. Like,
yeah, I don't really like any of the three acts of this movie, and I just don't really like it in general. Having watched it just before the break, when we were doing a podcast about XXX, I don't really know why this movie exists. I don't know why Cameron made it. I mean, that's just a view. I'll get into way more of my issues later on, but it was not my favorite viewing experience.
Yeah. Max, did you enjoy watching this, I assume, tonight while making dinner?
Tom Arnold's in it.
He sure is. So, Tom Arnold from that soccer movie you described to us one time.
It's a golf film, thank you very much.
Okay, but putts or something?
It's a golf film that I purchased at a gas station.
Little putts?
Thank you.
Yeah.
How do I say this? The action scenes are great because it is James Cameron. Jamie Lee Curtis is great because she is Jamie Lee Curtis. And other than that, you do sit there for full on 2 hours and 15, 20 minutes, kind of just saying, exactly as you put it, Road Warrior, why? Why did you do this? How did you all say yes to this? I've not seen La Totale. I bet it's incredibly French.
This makes more sense as a 90-minute French film from 30 years ago than it does a $100 million American blockbuster.
It just keeps going, and the whole time. And again, I will talk about it too, because I remembered loving it as a kid, and I loved it because of those reasons where you are a child, where you don't have to think about the concepts that are actually being put out into the world. But like, man, oh man, does this? It is reflective of a time and should stay kind of in that time.
I think there are reasons for this and The Abyss, like, not being released anytime soon. I think recently, like, on Blu-ray or anything, it's very hard to watch both of those movies. I think The Abyss might just be Cameron doesn't want to have his ego wounded by releasing a big special edition Abyss and no one buys it, because the movie wasn't that popular when it came out. And I think with True Lies, it's like, he doesn't want to deal with the think pieces maybe that would come out if this movie got a re-release and like talking about the, you know, sexual dynamics of this film.
Yeah, I mean, for me, there's a lot of things that are wrong with it, but at its core, like, even with The Abyss or all of other Cameron's movies,
I don't think The Abyss is bad.
Yeah, really. No, but you're right, it was not as successful as a lot of his other ones, but like, there's always something really cool and unique and some world-building element to all of his movies, like, really cool. There is just, this just feels like a bad pitch that any hack writer would go in into, like, a studio and be like, imagine a James Bond-type spy, but he's got a family. And his wife is unhappy.
Yeah.
And it's a comedy and an action movie, but it's really about a family. And it's like, oh my God, this is just so lame.
Well, it feels like a lesser version of like an 80s, like high concept, like Simpson and Bruckheimer, like the kind of thing they would do.
Yeah.
Again, and I think that Cameron is obviously, you know, strong argument to be made. Cameron's just the action director, like, of all time. He's obviously the perfect choice to do all the action stuff. I think, like, I don't know, Robert Zemeckis or like someone like that would have been better suited overall to like handle the half of this movie that's a sitcom.
Yeah, I also think that I understand why Schwarzenegger's in the movie. They have a deep collaboration at this point. Man, is he miscast. He is just
as American agent Harry, Trasker?
Yeah, Harry Trask, but like this suave, but also too, when he's on the job, he's supposed to be like very suave and like James Bond-like. Yeah. And like he's not good at that or the like boring American dad stuff. He's just terrible in the whole movie.
I'll tell you what, let's start at the very beginning, right? It opens on your classic Bond moment where he's getting to a party. A katana breaks the ice.
Yeah. He does the Bond thing of taking off a wetsuit from freezing cold water and having a completely dry tuxedo underneath.
And then he reminds us that it's going to be an American version because he has brought C4.
Yeah.
Bond would have had maybe a watch or some toothpaste that explodes. He just pulls a bomb out. He just like... Before he even goes in the party, he's like, I will need this bomb. It will be great.
Yeah. It's definitely...
Oh, jeez.
The most James Bond sequence of the movie, easily, by far.
I would argue it's almost the only James Bond, because the minute that they get back to the U.S., it's too American, and it's too... It's way different. But no, it exactly as you said to Arnold being miscast. He walks into this party, and you're supposed to understand that this character is incredibly intelligent and suave and great, because he walks in and he immediately speaks like three different languages within 2 minutes.
He
and
speaks man, perfect can, Arabic.
I was like, Arnold can barely speak the language the rest of this movie is in.
Yeah.
Let alone asking him to tackle two others.
I feel like that is a Cameron wink to the audience that he specifically says that Schwarzenegger is speaking perfect Arabic. It's like,
even the French was very hard to listen to.
It's like when in A View to a Kill, M introduces Christopher Walken by saying, like, speaks five languages, no accent. And he's like, hello!
Meanwhile, this one, it's like, speaks four languages, many accents. Many differing...
God, yeah. So a lot of really obvious, terrible shots of a stuntman who looks nothing like Schwarzenegger, like... Running down a snowy hill, I was like, does Arnold just not like to run in the snow?
I didn't realize watching that terrible version on Peacock. That is awful.
Yeah.
No, Arnold can't run for shit. Something that happens a lot, that we're talking about a lot in superhero movies nowadays is sort of like the superhero run. Arnold Schwarzenegger's body is not meant to be moving quickly. It is meant to be lifting things heavy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it is not meant. He sort of like... It's like you caught Bigfoot in the snow. It's not great.
Well, it's like, yeah, Arnold, you know, as the Terminator walks briskly, you know, the the T-1000 runs in that movie, Robert Patrick.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's why they cast Robert Patrick, is because he looks like someone who can run.
Yeah,
he runs so well that, oh.
Yeah, his run in that movie is one of the all-time best action movie runs.
Yeah.
Severely underrated in this modern era.
Also, I think you can pretty much count on one hand the number of shots where Schwarzenegger is clearly riding a horse in this movie, because there's a ton of shots also where, like, the horse is not running or doing any, like, crazy stunts, and just, like, I guess Arnold just didn't want to be on a horse that day.
Yeah, and then we get to Tom Arnold in his van, and Tom Arnold is supposed to... Tom's supposed to carry a lot of the sort of quote-unquote comedy. He just comes across the entire time as a broken asshole.
Yeah.
Just a lot of the stuff that, like, if you got someone really sarcastic, then maybe a lot of this comes across. A lot of it is just Tom Arnold telling Arnold Schwarzenegger that people cheat on their spouses. does not feel good.
That's
the entire first half of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, weird seeing Grant Heslov, who for the last 20 years has just been George Clooney's producing partner, playing one of the American agent sidekicks. And it feels like having him in the movie is like the movie's bid for, like, no, we're actually not racist. Like, see, this Middle Eastern looking guy is good.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this movie's so fucking racist. They don't try one iota to like reason with. The worst part is that the Art Malik like tries to play this as like a real human being.
Yeah.
And like to sound reasonable and like, I think he overall does a really good job with the nothing burger of a just sort of like, yeah, and then you're the terror guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, and what do I do with that? And they're like, you have the nukes and you're going to blow them up. And he's like, do I have a reason? And they're like, well, because you're the terrorist. And it's like, oh, great. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. In an odd way, it feels like very prescient, because after, you know, 9/11 and everything, I feel like every bad action movie, and like there were so many movies about like, oh, yeah, you know, Muslim terrorists,
there's
so many things about like the Middle East and like tensions that didn't exist yet, but it's all just bad. And it just feels so generic too. It's the most generic, boring look a terrorist plot like I've ever heard in a movie.
When they let Tom Arnold handle the heavy lifting of the plot, when he's describing this guy and they describe him as a terrorist that was too terroristy for the other terrorists, which is the laziest, most bullshit storytelling I can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
I'd like to publicly apologize to Eliza Dushku and Christina Ricci for a couple episodes when I said that Christina Ricci plays their daughter in this movie. I totally Mandela'd that in my head.
In what planet does Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis getting together create one Eliza Dushku? What the fuck was that casting?
Yeah, how tall is Eliza Dushku? Like 5'4" or something?
Yeah.
Those are two giants, and also she's like has like, I don't know, it's completely hilarious.
But what age is she supposed to be?
Well,
it's a very weird.
Yeah, she has a boyfriend who rides a motorcycle, looks 28. I think Tom Arnold, that was the thing I wrote down. I think they say either 13 or 14, and Tom Arnold is telling Schwarzenegger, oh, she's definitely not a virgin. She's probably stealing money to have an abortion. It's like, whoa.
Yikes. Yeah, in one of the many, quote, jokes that this movie tells, he says that she is 14. I also looked up the, she was 14 when they shot this movie.
Yeah.
I bet that they just went with what her age is.
Why does she have a 23-year-old boyfriend with a full beard riding a motorcycle? Like, it's so weird.
They refer to as like they refer to him by his profession at some point, but like they clearly cut a scene where he's like at their house or something. Because instead we just get a random guy on a motorcycle. Thanks, 1990s. Not even like a motorcycle, but like a dirt bike. It wasn't even like a street motorcycle, which is even weirder. Man, that made no sense. Also, like she like steals from her dad to show us that their home life is broken. They don't fix that.
Yeah,
that doesn't get better, because by the end of the movie, she's more alone because Jamie Lee Curtis is now also a secret agent.
Well, but see, she like, her gifts for stealing pay off because she steals the launch key for the warhead.
her
save the cat moment.
Wow, I forgot about that. That's really great, man.
Yeah,
but
thanks, James. Well, how well would we do without that really great piece of world building? The women in this really get to do a heavy lifting.
Yeah, as insulting as this is towards, you know, anyone from the Middle East, and it's very insulting to them, it's about just as insulting to women too. Yeah. So it really hits a lot of groups in terms of just being awful towards everyone.
Yeah, so Harry Tasker, I think, should be fired as a government agent and divorced from his wife for the way he wields the government for his own personal shit.
And arrested several times over.
Absolutely. Movie really needs, like, one moment in the first act where, like, even if they're not getting along, you can see that he and his daughter actually have some bond. Because at the end, the finale just comes down to him saving the daughter, basically. And it's like the bratty kid who steals from them. Like, do we care that much?
Yeah.
Dude, I would argue that the first half of the movie needs a moment where Harry likes his wife.
Yeah.
There is not a moment where he does not. And again, this is just to do with look, it is not Arnold Schwarzenegger's fault that he is, whatever amount of actor that he is, right? There's stuff that he has done that I absolutely love him in, but this is a role that required levels of sort of nuance and sophistication to actually pull off that he just doesn't have.
Totally.
Or at least he doesn't have it in the English language, because every one of the scenes where he comes home, he feels put upon to be with his family.
Yeah.
And for this to come across as good, he has to come home, and you have to get that he wants to be there. Otherwise, it's just a man that realized that he might be being cheated on, and that offends his masculinity, as opposed to a man that truly loves his wife and his daughter, and that he fears that he may have fucked up enough that it is now gone for good.
Yeah, he feels like just a possessive asshole.
Yeah.
His ego is damaged.
Yeah, he goes, his one kind of good deed or attempted good deed is he's like, I guess I should have lunch with my wife to smooth things over. But that's only because he thinks he's in the doghouse, not because he seems to love his wife.
He doesn't. It's not even phrased in a way that is for her. He literally is like, you need to sit here in this car, Tom Arnold. I'll leave the windows down because I need to go and make sure that everything is fine with, quote, the missus. Like it. And again, I think that if you had had a legit actor, that a lot of those things get fixed, and then it can feel slightly better until we get to the kidnapping and the what is ostensibly rape of your own wife. Yeah. But before that, like if you'd put a legitimate actor in this, the opening act at least, I'm like, I'm fine with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So who would be your pick in 94, and who would be your pick today to play Harry Tasker?
In 94? I don't know. Could George Clooney have done it in 94?
It's funny. I was thinking about that this morning in the car, and I he was the first guy that came to mind.
I think he would be like, just old enough to be kind of convincing as a guy who has a teenager.
Well,
yeah, like you're asking for someone who's like mid to late 30s, right?
Yeah. Another guy that I thought about, and only because this would have been pre-Mission, he might have still been too young as well, but this would have been pre-Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise, I think. Like, he's an American guy who could pull off the suaveness of a spy and maybe pass as a family man.
Yeah,
he's done both.
Only, I was going to say the only problem is that he's coming off of The Firm and A Few Good Men, where he's very young feeling. Yeah,
I think
that's the only issue.
I think 30 year old Tom Cruise would probably not be okay with having a teenager in a movie.
Yeah, no, I do think he's too young, but
maybe Kurt Russell. I think Kurt Russell could have done it.
Yeah,
I mean, I have a really obvious pick, but Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, totally.
If he can pull off the American accent,
then... Well, why not make him a British agent or he, you know, immigrated or whatever.
It's funny. I thought about him too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cuz I think we all kind of ended up in the same place.
I think Pierce Brosnan and Clooney would both be good at the kind of like bumbling Clark Kent that his family sees him as.
Yeah.
I actually think I got this. He had turned 40 that year. He is mostly at this point known for more serious roles, but we know that he can do comedy. Denzel Washington.
Huh. Yeah.
He could destroy this role.
He could definitely do the spy parts.
Yeah, it's like, do we take this movie too seriously if it's Denzel?
Yeah.
No, because he's not. He's totally funny.
No, he is.
They didn't know it. They didn't know it in the 90s. But like that dude can totally handle.
Yeah, he could probably pull it off.
Especially because to me, you recast Tom Arnold as Matthew Perry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just someone who's just gonna be like straight. Just they could say the most sort of like heartfelt thing in the world, and you'd be like, that dude's being sarcastic.
Yeah.
Because like that's what you actually need in that role, because every one of his lines could just be taken as an asshole, but it has to be someone that you would never take seriously in a million years.
I wonder if Matthew Perry, like, they wanted him for this role and he maybe even auditioned and like it didn't work out, because I feel like he would be better than Tom Arnold even in 94.
I feel like any of the three of us would be better than Tom Arnold in this very specific instance.
As 3 year olds or now?
As I don't know, I was pretty brave.
Let's say we have a time machine, okay? Yeah. Let's say we have the ability to travel time and space and can go back at our current age. Yeah. I think any one of us pull it off better than Tom Arnold. Yeah,
I definitely think so. But you know who I would never replace in a million years is Jamie Lee Curtis, because she's the only reason to watch this movie. Other than that and the Harrier jet are the two reasons to watch this movie.
Yeah, she's great in it. The Harrier jet is cool. I can almost kind of pass on that as a final action.
The bridge scene. Thing is a lot better than the building jet thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not. Oh no, I'm saying every scene with a Harrier jet, because also when this came out, a Harrier jet was a spaceship.
Yeah,
yeah.
We
like that. That's the thing, right? Remember 1994. Like people are seeing that, and it does not feel like it exists.
Well, two things that this movie shares with The Living Daylights: Art Malik, who's the good Mujahideen guy in Afghanistan in that movie, and a Harrier jet, which you get in one of the first scenes of Living Daylights.
Wow, a lot of connective tissue with.
Yeah, should they have gotten Timothy Dalton for this movie? You tell me.
Well, yes, obviously is the answer.
Of course, we're all fine with that.
Again, you could fix a lot of the bad race stuff by me. You could just have him be the terrorist.
Yeah, that's the thing that, like, post 9/11, it seems like we're mostly playing it safe, and like the bad guys are always old white guys, and it just feels pretty dated and tasteless the way the Middle Eastern terrorists are portrayed in this.
Just sort of sloppy and like unshaven and like also like they're played out to be religious extremists, but then they just parade around a bunch of women like in like short dresses and stuff. It's the same thing that Cameron kind of does a lot, or has been known to do a lot, and this is a lot of the news that has come out about Way of Water too, is this guy that espouses how much he like looks into every story he makes and stuff, but then the man is the king of generalizations.
Yeah, yeah. Crimson Jihad, you know, great name for a band.
Also, just the worst name for a terrorist organization.
I think the bathroom shootout is pretty cool.
The glasses are like a cool Bondian set piece, right? He gets a pair of sunglasses. They obviously are alluding to Terminator, which is fun and cute,
yeah,
because he's wearing sunglasses at nighttime. And they, like, you know, there's a line making fun of it, but like that is a cool piece, being able to do the shot in shot swapping back and forth. His fight with that dude is great. That dude's got to be his stunt double, right? That dude that bigger dude.
Which bigger dude?
He fights two dudes in the bathroom, and one of them is just sort of like generic Middle Eastern guy. The other dude is about the same size as Arnold, maybe about an inch taller, but same build. That has to be either his stand-in or his stunt double.
I feel like we see a different looking guy in the snow at the beginning and riding the horse.
I don't know. All I can say is that he comes up and doesn't look super Middle Eastern.
They are very similar in build, yes. They're like the exact same height.
That's kind of what I'm saying. It felt like that thing where he's like, you know, you throw a dude a bone who, like, you've worked with for a while. Because we see that happen a lot with people's stunt doubles, where they're just like, hey, just be in this one.
Yeah, this movie is a big fan of Uzis that get the trigger gets pulled and just fires on its own for 5 minutes.
Yeah, movies like this made me really terrified that guns would just go off all the time.
Yeah.
I feel like when you're a kid, you're worried that all guns are hair triggers, and you're worried about quicksand.
Yeah.
I feel like those were two,
I was about to say
two worries.
Yeah.
Those are two worries as a child that I was like, that will be the thing that takes me out, is that someone will squeeze an Uzi or drop it and I will get shot.
Also, maybe I probably shouldn't wear headphones ever, because I will not be able to hear gunfire and explosions in the next room.
By the way, I've shot an Uzi. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It is. Things should not go that fast. It is a scary sort of happenstance, just FYI.
What are Uzis made for? I don't really understand their purpose, because I don't think you could carry one in like a military setting. And why would you need a machine gun as like a civilian? Like,
I knew a guy that hunted rabbits with it, which is just not what it was.
I have a feeling that's not the reason either.
Yeah. The feeling you're going to be picking a lot.
I guess it's got to be a military weapon.
It was because it's also it is not it is not for general consumption. So it's one of the guns that came out World War II era, where people were essentially discovering what a machine gun really was, and the idea was simply make something that is super small but can shoot a whole lot of bullets at once. For example, Google something called the Sten. It was a British gun. It looks like if British people made a gun, you will honestly laugh a little bit. It is essentially just sort of a tube. It is essentially just a tube with a stock that you can shove a magazine into. But the 1940s and 50s were a wild time where human beings were kind of just like, how many bullets per second can I shoot? Because I don't want to have to aim anymore. Okay. I just want to hit the thing by sort of like sheer numbers.
Yeah.
Kind of thankless role for Jamie Lee Curtis, although she, you know, best performance of this movie, but she also has to have her ass described as being like a 10-year-old boy by Bill Paxton. So
what is
that's
that
kind of a tough beat.
Yeah,
wowzers. Oh, by the way, yeah, Bill Paxton also does a great job in this movie.
He does.
He's annoying.
That line is really weird.
It's, a lot of this movie is really freaking weird.
are we supposed to assume that Bill Paxton, the used car salesman who lives in a trailer park, is actually flying women to London and Paris? Yeah. Or are those like fake airline tickets he has lying around?
I have a feeling that the plan is get them to his trailer have sex with them, and then that is the end of the roller coaster. But he does say at gunpoint that he has done this before, which is even more wild.
Yeah. Yeah, that just, the whole thing with Schwarzenegger versus Bill Paxton, it like made me think of when Superman in Superman 2 regains his powers and goes back to the redneck bar and just beats up a mortal guy. To like, it's just so, it feels so, like he's so beneath him that it's like, wow, this is kind of like, I know this guy sucks, but this still feels kind of cruel.
Yeah, I honestly, I think that the movie, and some people could have called it a like a loose end. I think the movie works better if you just go straight from the Jamie Lee Curtis in the interrogation scene, just straight back to Arnold's house. Like, I don't think you actually need to know. I think you can just assume that, like, they gave the guy a rough time. They put him in a jail cell for 48 hours and then they let him go on the street. Right.
Yeah. I just want to say also too, before we, it's because we're on that scene and as we have the movie playing in the background. A horse cannot keep up with a motorcycle. I hope they're all... That really bothered me a lot this in the rewatch. Like, if I was 10, maybe I wouldn't think that. But, like, there's one point where they're just in a dead sprint through, like, a grassy area where the motorcycle can absolutely go at full force. And the horse is running right along next to it. That cannot happen.
It's a police horse.
Yeah, but...
Maybe it's got NOS. We just watched Triple X. I'm willing to,
anything can have NOS. Yeah, according to Triple X.
Yeah,
and Fast and Furious.
And the Fast. Yeah, exactly.
Either of you guys seen In the Line of Fire with Clint Eastwood?
Mm-mm.
I think it's the same hotel that they're in. I think that movie climaxes in the same hotel that he chases this guy into. That's like a, I think, real place in DC with those like really cool kind of futuristic outdoor elevators.
Yeah. It would have been cool if they climaxed together in the same place.
I would
they
love
just
it.
Run into Clint Eastwood and John and Malkovich.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh god, that would be the greatest in joke if like one elevator opened and John Malkovich like has a hostage and is like taken, like occupied.
Can we just have put John Malkovich into this also somewhere? Because that was a perfect time period for that. Could he have been the terrorist? That also would have made this movie better.
He was waiting for his best turn as a villain, which is the movie Rounders that came out.
Ooh, you're saying that that's his best villain role? It's not Con Air?
I guess Con Air.
I just rewatched Con Air. That movie slaps. That movie is so good.
That movie is great.
That movie's fucking awesome. I would rather watch that movie several times than watch this movie another time. Man, even the femme fatale in her second scene gets full face slapped two different times.
Yeah.
This movie hates women.
Well, yeah, just the making his wife do the striptease when she thinks she's like her life is
it
in danger
sucks,
is just
man.
Really gross.
That sucks so bad. It sucks, and it's played for a joke, which is even worse. I feel like James Cameron didn't understand that even from an audience perspective, he was like, the audience knows it and Arnold knows it, and therefore it's going to be cute. But you're sitting there, and all you're thinking about is how this poor woman is dying. She's dying inside. Like, it sucks so bad.
Yeah, she is treated very poorly through pretty much the whole movie.
And then
also,
go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to say, Harry Tasker is an absolute idiot if he thinks that he can jump that horse onto the next building into the swimming pool. Like...
Well, as he finds out, the
horse will not do that. But also, yeah, no way that could ever work.
Yeah, and then he blames the horse. He tries to shame the horse, which, again, I get that it's a joke, but it's a really dumb joke because there is a terrorist that just escaped, and he's like, come on, I thought you were a police horse. And it's like, what are you doing? Go downstairs. Get a task force together. An actual terrorist with four live nukes is on the other building. He has to go back downstairs. Stop doing buddy cop shit with a horse. Go arrest him.
It's just such a bad movie.
It's so
bad. It's so bad.
Helen Tasker, just one of the all-time worst people at recognizing her own husband.
Oh my God.
Who is a few feet away from her in kind of a shadow. They're making out on a hotel bed. She does not recognize him. She beats the shit out of him for like a minute before he says, "Helen, it's me, it's Harry." But like, not a lot of people look or sound like Schwarzenegger.
By the way, can we just say...
Even if he has the recording.
Can we just say that Arnold Schwarzenegger, the actor, is a tough guy? Arnold Schwarzenegger is now playing a secret agent. His wife must have superhuman strength. She beats the shit out of so many people in this movie. And I get that that is how they try to give her back power. It's not enough because you still steal all of her power emotionally, which is the things that suck. And I know for a fact that's what Cameron and Schwarzenegger and stuff would argue, that they're like, well, look, she beats up the one lady and she is able to escape. And it's like, none of that matters because you stole choice from her. Right, she is always a tool of the plot. She never actually gets to control anything that is going on. But that aside, she beats the shit out of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then I get that the woman wakes back up. She kills that lady in the car, right? She hits her with a full champagne bottle in the head twice. That kills human beings. Yeah. She brains her.
Tia Carrera is conscious when that car goes off the bridge. She might not be dead. She could come back.
She could come back in two.
TL2.
TL2.
Judgment Day? Yeah.
Yeah, Judgment Day. What if every James Cameron sequel was
just called Judgment
Avatar
Day.
Judgment Day?
I would have. They could have drawn me to Avatar 2 a lot faster if it was Avatar 2 Judgment Day.
Yeah, that would have been a really good title.
You know, Jamie Lee Curtis won Golden Globe Best Actress
in a comedy,
musical or comedy for this movie. Yeah.
Boy, that must have been a weak year, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what the competition was. Again, I think she's doing well given the script that she has.
Was she nominated for an Oscar?
For this? I don't think so.
No, but it was nominated for a couple Oscars for the technical stuff, which makes sense. A lot of this because it's Cameron, looks great. As you said, the scene on the bridge looks awesome. All the fight scenes are pretty damn good. Oh, how did we skip over? Arnold Schwarzenegger brains those two dogs. How did none of us mention the fact that Arnold turns around and picks up the two dogs and smacks their heads together? What the fuck?
Yeah.
Was that them being like, this will show everyone that it's a comedy. Look, it's funny. It's slapstick.
I think we get it's a comedy from the first scene from Tom Arnold and pretty much every other part of the first scene.
It's wild. I apologize that I went all the way back to the beginning. I'd completely forgotten about that. And that is buck wild. That is one of the weirder things that is like appeared in just an action movie.
There's just so much to unpack with this movie, you know? You can talk about it three times over.
What do they say that Helen does for a living?
Doesn't she work for a lawyer?
She does, like, tax stuff, right?
Yeah. Her coworker's very down to cover for her for afternoon delight session.
Yeah, it means that she's... Helen is a great person. I mean, she's nice.
Yeah. Well, I guess if I were her coworker and I knew how much her husband sucked, I'd be like, all right, you go do this for you.
Dude, who is like 4 hours late to their own birthday? He's the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. And with his the only thing he says is that he had to run back to the office to get something.
His like,
when he, is the office in a different state?
When he first comes back, there's like Tom Arnold's like, all right, here's your tickets, here's postcards, here's a gift for your kid. How in the world don't they have a contingency plan where it's like, oh, you got in a car accident, so like, yeah, like here's an insurance form and here's a police report. Instead, literally, he calls her. Tom Arnold calls her. And is like, it's Harry. I don't know. He had to go back to the office. Oh no.
Yeah, he says, you know Harry. It's like, yeah, I know Harry. Always 5 hours late to dinner. Like, she's terrible at recognizing her husband, and she's terrible at not recognizing that her husband is obviously some kind of spy.
Yeah, yeah, and also the main final set piece is all in Miami, and this movie dares to be so lazy that again poor Tom Arnold, deliverer of sort of like every piece of important information of this movie, after the big hug and the awesome set sequence that is the bridge, has to walk up and be like, hey, your daughter is missing from Washington DC. Yeah. We don't know where she is, even though you two have been missing for 24 hours. We didn't send agents to protect her, by the way.
Yeah. And so he says, yeah, very nonchalantly, he's just like, hey, man, they got Dana. And then Schwarzenegger, not affected at first, goes, my Dana? And it's like, no, Dana Carvey, you asshole. Like, who do you think we're talking about here?
America's Sweetheart, the host of the Dana Carvey show. Dana Carvey. Someone go get him.
All right, look, give me this Harrier jet.
Oh no, he played me in that one scene. He does we're here to pump you up. I have to save him.
Bad idea to shoot an AK-47 at the person who's flying the plane that you're standing on.
Yeah,
I wouldn't recommend that to anyone.
These terrorists are terrible terrorists also.
They blew all their juice.
Are you insulting my favorite very real terrorist group, Crimson Jihad?
Yeah,
a real terrorist group would definitely come up with that name.
They blew all their mojo on the great name.
Like, none of them can shoot for a damn. A bunch of them get killed by an Uzi falling down a staircase.
They all run into the line of fire.
and again, one of the great jokes of the movie. That one dude gets shot through the window from the rocket launcher. Also wild and unnecessary. These terrorists are bad. We're so lucky that we are being attacked by bad terrorists instead of good ones.
Yeah, props to Tia Carrera for trying to act like she's charmed by Schwarzenegger and like they have any chemistry whatsoever. Yeah, I like the bridge scene. I like when they escape from the terrorist hideout, just for the Cameron spectacle of it all.
But, yeah, that is probably my favorite sequence of the movie. The whole them getting captured and like then in the terrorist lair or whatever in the breakout is kind of fun.
Yeah. I think one of the moments I legitimately like from Schwarzenegger is when they say, are these missiles going to set the nuke off if we start firing at the bridge? And he's like, negative. I repeat, negative. And then looks at Tom Arnold's like, I don't know about that, actually. Gets James Cameron, I guess, wanted to do a little joke of having the terrorist truck is perfectly balanced on the broken bridge.
And oh boy.
A pelican kills them. feels very Roger Moore.
Yeah.
It is not. The movie that describes itself as a comedy does not have enough comedy to pull that joke off, right?
Yeah.
Like it is not a bad joke, especially if you play it better. And obviously, it's not the first time that a joke like that has happened. Usually in cartoons. But like this movie is just not actually funny enough to carry it off. Also, by the way, that truck then falls roughly 4 feet and explodes. The fuck is that? That's nothing.
Also, dude, this movie hates dogs.
Yeah!
That poor little dog
The scene, it's on just now where Arnold Schwarzenegger is walking his dog, his little, small, tiny dog in the rain, who probably doesn't want to walk in the rain, and then he's, like, literally tossing it around to keep up with him, like, pulling it off the ground. Like, what's wrong with this guy?
This dude's a sociopath, and his wife should leave him. Everything about this makes no sense.
Yeah, it seems like in the 80s and, like, part of the 90s, American audiences were just charmed by movie heroes being bullies as well.
But also, because I obviously watched this movie a couple of weeks ago, and does that dog ever show up earlier in, like, earlier scenes?
No.
Or is that
they just have
a
dog. No, it does. Is it a dog or a cat that the daughter is feeding, like, frosting to?
Oh, it is the dog.
Baking.
Oh, okay.
And Helen's like, stop it. And it's like, what? It's a dude. Who gives it? This dog gets thrown around, apparently. Let it eat frosting, at least.
Yeah,
I don't know. That frosting's not getting cooked. It's just licking, like, the spoon that's going back into the bowl that humans are going to eat. I agree with Helen on that one. Let's see. Anything else we should talk about for True Lies?
I'd like to stop talking about this movie as soon as possible and never talk about it or watch it again.
Yeah, please and thank you. I'm fine with that.
I mean, I guess we should say, yeah, Bill Paxton's kind of fun.
Is there a best or worst Arnold one-liner from the movie?
You're fired's pretty fucking bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially because, like, it's not as if he ever worked for him. we knew that he had a job at any point.
Yeah, it's like it's also just like a few years before this, we've had the same line get used at the end of RoboCop before Ronnie Cox gets killed.
Yeah. So it's not even that original.
Nor is the him flying on the rocket into the helicopter is like exactly the Timothy Dalton's death in The Rocketeer. Yeah. So we're bringing it all around back to T-Dalt.
Yeah, this movie owes a lot to T-Dalt, really, when you think about it.
Rocketeer, Living Daylights, I assume Beautician and the Beast.
Oh, no. What would this be like if it was Timothy Dalton and Fran Drescher instead? Because now it's a comedy. Now we can actually call this Harry. No, please don't.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just like this movie's 2.5 hours long. It takes the action stuff pretty seriously and then turns into a sitcom for a lot of it. It's just I feel like nowadays, or even before this, like stuff like Beverly Hills Cop just gets the tone right in a way that this movie's like pretty confused.
Eddie Murphy could have also done this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Easily. In his sleep, he would have sleptwalked through this.
Yeah. This movie has absolutely no business being as long as it is, too. It's just meant, like, it is just so long. There's so many scenes that could easily be cut.
Yeah, you need to just cut Bill Paxton out of the movie and put in some other stuff in the middle where his, you know, family doesn't respect him, that they have to patch
up
or whatever.
Cut the daughter. The also I was reading on the French version, I don't think they have a kid in that one. Like why does she have to exist? That way the movie is an hour 45, right?
Yeah.
Nice and tight. It ends after the bridge sequence. Like what's wrong with that?
Yeah, that makes sense too, because nobody this absent could ever be a father and a husband.
Yeah, like, seriously.
The wife would have left years ago. This guy would have never been there for the kid growing up.
Well, and Tom Arnold says it, doesn't he? Just as he always does, because he's a paragon of truth.
He's a sage.
That he's an absentee father who's only there for 5 minutes, and she's truly being raised by Axl Rose and Madonna. I can't. Oh, this movie's so bad.
Oh, Tom Arnold. You sweet, sweet, mediocre actor who I've never seen in anything I've liked. And you've been around for 35 years now.
Okay, hey, let's give him that one scene in Austin Powers, all right?
Okay, yeah.
You know what? Yeah, that's true. That's the one thing you can get. You can never take that away from him.
Yeah, yeah, that's a blink and you miss him performance, though, you know.
Okay, so that's True Lies. I would say next time it's streaming somewhere that's not a terrible quality version like the one Peacock has, maybe watch the first half hour and the last half hour would be my half-assed recommendation.
Yeah, my recommendation would be run like Arnold stunt double down that snow-covered mountain in the first scene.
All right, well, James Cameron, we're going to rank all of his filmography, or at least the ones that we've all seen. I'm a fan overall. I think he obviously has his strengths in great spectacle. I think George Lucas is a really easy comparison, except that Cameron's actually a really good director of action. But you know, both pretty awkward when they try to have real emotion or especially romance in their films.
Yeah, when's the last time y'all rewatched Titanic, by the way?
I watched it a couple years ago.
Watched
it in the Max, probably maybe when you were even still living out here. I mean, it's been a long time.
I watched the when it came out in theaters for the 3D.
Yeah.
Hey dudes. I don't think that James Cameron knows how human beings speak to one another. I'm not sure that dude knows what actual people know, like say to each other. It's any of those scenes that is not about how cool a boat is hurt. They hurt bad.
That is one thing you can say about even his best movies is like, man, you could have given like. Could David Mamet have not done like a ghost rewrite or something
for real?
Like Tarantino did, you know, uncredited rewrite for The Rock. Like, could you not get anywhere? I think it's just his ego where he wants it to be him.
Could you not have Aaron Sorkin take a quick look at this? Like, for the love of all that's holy. Can I remake Titanic and just have it be Victor Garber talking about how cool the boat is? Because I'd watch that for at least an hour.
Max, how many Camerons do you have ranked?
I have five.
Oh, wait. Oh, no. I was saying rank all the Camerons.
What do you mean?
That you've seen. Like, because he has such a tiny filmography that I was thinking. Rank him.
Dude, I might have also only seen five.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'll start.
I haven't seen The Abyss and I haven't seen Way of Water.
I
think we all just say these in order, and then we do the Arnold five as our round table discussion. Like, I think we can give a pretty brief recap because, like, I've seen seven Cameron movies. I haven't seen the new Avatar, and I haven't seen Piranha 2.
Well, let's count down. We can go really fast. I'll start because I've nine.
Okay.
My nine is of course Piranha 2 3D or no Piranha 2 The Spawning.
Yeah, not 3D.
Yeah, that's a different movie, which it both deserves to be last because it's his worst, but also because I think he has a legitimate case for saying, like, that's not really his movie. Like, he, according to Cameron, he was fired after 2 weeks from that. That said, kind of a fun time. There's a scene where a nurse is looking at a dead body and a piranha... sticks its head out of the guy's stomach, much like a baby xenomorph, and then flies into this woman's face and kills her. It's Flying Fish. Lance Henriksen's in it. It's kind of a fun, dumb B-movie. And then my number eight, I think, is going to have to be True Lies, which, as I've said, I enjoy parts of kind of a weak movie overall. How about your seven?
My seven is True Lies. Again,
big surprise.
I think I said this earlier. At least I don't love all of Cameron's movies, but most of them have some cool like world building elements, some cool conceptual idea that makes them at least interesting. This has nothing. It's just a bad movie.
My seven is The Abyss, which could definitely, I feel like, could jump up a little higher if I watched it again. Again, that's kind of a difficult movie to find and watch, at least a good quality version today. I saw it once in college. Kind of a cool movie. Didn't love the ending, but I'd like to watch it again at some point. And I'll go my six is Avatar: The Way of Water, which I saw it with my family on Christmas Day. I sat next to my Uncle Tony, who you guys both know, who was kind of sighing and rolling his eyes the whole time. And
I know, like, Tony imagine, well enough. Imagine, I know Tony well enough that I bet that was distracting as fuck.
Yes, it was at times. And then the movie ends and a song, The Weeknd does a pop song for the credits that's just one of those, like, this movie's about family kind of songs. Family is important. And just, like, directed by James Cameron comes up, and theater sold out, full of families and young kids on Christmas Day. Tony goes, Jesus fucking Christ.
Tony is my hero. That's fantastic.
That said, I walked out of the movie kind of exhausted. It is over 3 hours, and thinking, like, that was pretty long and stupid. I was thinking about it and the action scenes the next day, and was just like, yeah, I could probably go watch that again. Kind of delivers what it has to, and there is some really great spectacle and sequences. So I'd say worth watching on a big screen. Avatar: The Way of Water will not work at all at home.
I haven't seen.
What's your six?
My number six is the original Avatar. A lot of the criticisms you just, said about Avatar Way of Water, about the original Avatar, I think it's, like, it's kind of a cool concept. It's got some great spectacle. There's something interesting there, but it's just, it's corny at many points. It's not very, the story is not, it's basically non-existent. And, it just didn't really work for me. You know, and if I wasn't seeing it in theaters, I tried to watch it at home one time. It was like, wow, this really has no value outside of watching it in a movie theater.
The strengths of both movies are the action and just existing in that world and being immersed by it in 3D in a theater, that it just watching it, not especially not in its entirety, but at home, doesn't really play.
Yeah.
Max, number five for you?
Titanic. Mm-hmm. It's a movie about a boat. Bill Paxton's in it. Everybody in the world has seen it at this point. There's a certain scene in it that I watched many times as a child. It's of course the scene where the band is playing at the, no, it's the scene with the boobies. There are people in it that are great. All the performances are great. I really want to say that it is better than his fifth best movie. But again, I watched it recently, and every time I watch it, the dialogue hurts more and more and more, which is unfortunate because it is a marvel. There are parts of it that are absolutely amazing. But from a watchability standpoint, there are four movies above it that I would rather watch.
My number five is the first Avatar. Kind of said it how I felt about the second Avatar, just that the first one works a little more, it's not as long, and it was cooler the first time. Your number four, I guess?
I still have to do my five, because
Avatar's okay, my six. I thought, okay, you're right.
My number five is The Abyss. As you said earlier, yeah, it's cool, I like it. It's not a perfect movie. The ending's a little weird. The only reason why I probably notches out Avatar on my list is I think I would probably enjoy watching it again at home more than I would Avatar. It has a little bit better repeat watchability in different circumstances than just in a theater.
Yeah. Max, number four?
My number four is the first Avatar movie. Yeah. It's you know... It gets made fun of, because of the whole, like, you know, all the things about it, but, like, it's fun. There's a reason it made all that money. The James Horner score is fantastic. A lot of the stuff in it is really fun and great to watch. Hell yeah. I, you know, it was a good time.
Yeah, my number four is Titanic. I think it sounds like I like it a bit more than you. It's very corny. I think it still kind of plays. And the second half of the movie where the boat is sinking is just so awesome that I can forgive a lot to enjoy that spectacle. Good James Horner score.
Oh, yes. I should have mentioned it. You're 100% right.
That's my number four as well.
Yeah.
Kind of the same reasons.
Yeah.
Exact same thing you said, but the ending with the boat sinking and I don't know, that there's some part of it just like being in that world and getting this like look inside this really cool moment in history that ended very tragically. It's kind of fun.
Max four or three?
Three. My third is T2.
Oh, interesting.
We're finally in the top three. T2's freaking awesome, but I won't lie. T2 for me, it fails a little bit because what's her face that plays Sarah Connor is just like, I don't think she's like an astounding actress.
Linda Hamilton.
Yeah. So like you get a lot of her in that movie, like wishing that she was in Mad Max. Like, and it's that movie's freaking awesome, but the other two movies that are very clearly going to be one and two, I would rather rewatch, if that makes sense.
I think the first Terminator is more in conversation with the second than people give it credit for, and it's, well, it's really awesome. Anyway, what's your wait,
you didn't do your three?
Oh, okay. So yeah, my three is the first Terminator, which, yeah, we've just mentioned a lot of Cameron movies that I kind of like. We're now onto the three that I really love. The first Terminator is awesome. There are parts that are kind of dated and corny and just very 80s, but like it still kind of rules. It's short and sweet. It's like 100 minutes long. It was somehow made for $6 million, which is amazing.
It's wild. It is wild when you think about that.
I also think like, you know, people, some of the like the main twist kind of being that kind of paradox of like Kyle Reese's John Connor's father is like a thing that kids kind of grow up knowing now, like Darth Vader's Luke Skywalker's father, but like pretty cool finding out the story of the movie in the second half of the movie as it's happening. It's a, yeah, probably more interesting script than the next two movies. But yeah, really, really like the first Terminator.
Yeah, that's my number three as well. And I'd say at this point, I think we all know what the top three are for all of us.
Yeah.
They're kind of interchangeable for me. I think all three of them are masterpieces. So, and I agree that the first Terminator is closer to two than people give it credit for. All these movies are very close in their level of quality.
Also, yeah, like that Sarah Connor actually has an arc in the first movie where it's now we have that thing where like Ocean's 8 or Wonder Woman or stuff like that is sort of the confusing of the strong female character with like the perfect flawless female character.
And yes,
like
Sarah, exactly.
I love that Sarah Connor is just some normal 20 something waitress who by the end of the movie and the journey she's got on, she fucking kills a Terminator. And that's really cool.
Yeah, it's speed, right? Uh-huh. We all love,
Sandra Bullock.
Thank you. We all love Sandra Bullock in Speed because she's just a person put into a situation and she excels.
Yeah.
And it's like that is so much better and more fun to watch.
You're talking about two, Cruise Control, right?
100%. Where they're driving Tom Cruise, and if Tom Cruise gets below a certain speed. My two is Aliens, Vanessa. Uh-huh. I think that it is one of the, I think it's a near perfect action movie. I think it's awesome and badass that you cannot say enough about it. If you are a human being on this earth that is somehow listening to this podcast and has not seen Alien or Aliens, that is a franchise that magically made one of the best horror/thriller movies, and then as its sequel decided to release possibly the best action movie. It is wild. You don't have to watch any of the other ones. You're fine. But one and two are masterclasses in their genres. They're fantastic.
My two is Terminator 2. Yeah, it's one of the best action movies ever. Robert Patrick as the T-1000, one of the best villains ever. I love him.
So good.
Wagging his finger at Linda Hamilton at the end is great. It's pretty long also, even the theatrical version, but there's never really a dull moment. I think Edward Furlong's a little bit annoying and he has the like corniest dialogue of the movie, so that maybe takes it down a notch for me from first place, but it's obviously an amazing movie.
Yeah, my number two is Aliens. Max, as you said, it's pretty much perfect.
That's cool. So we all have we all have a different one.
Yeah.
Then I like that.
Aliens is basically a perfect action movie. It's kind of insane what James Cameron decided to do for a sequel to a sci-fi horror movie and just kind of turn it into his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has so many memorable moments, but I think it has one of the greatest sequences of all time, which is the aliens in the ceiling. The scene with when they're tracking them. I think that might be one of the coolest little, like, oh, you know what would be sick? Is just like doing this one little weird thing. That scene alone, like anyone who wants to work in movies, who wants to write movies, who wants to direct movies, who wants to have anything to do with movies, I'd point to that as like, just go watch that scene. That's a good starting point of how you should think about making movies.
Yeah.
It's so inventive, so freaking cool. And so that's my number two.
Max, number one.
My number one is Terminator. It's the Terminator. I don't know a lot of what to say about it. It is fantastic. It's incredibly well written. It does not speak when it doesn't have to. It is a movie that transcends and will withstand the test of time. It is a movie that was so successful that it spawned a career so successful. Well, he had been in other stuff, but mainstreamed a man into such a success that he became a governor. It is the original. It is I'll Be Back, which is up there with Luke, I Am Your Father. When it comes to just overall movie lines, it is the thumbs up into the lava. When a movie becomes a more well known for its moments than for the movie that it is, it must be thought of as a classic.
Yeah, it's like Conan kind of made Schwarzenegger a household name. The first Terminator makes him a movie star. The second Terminator kind of extends his A-list career for another decade. And it speaks to Cameron's strength that, like, there really are three, possibly even four or five movies that people could all argue as their favorites or the most, like, you know, obviously we don't love Titanic or Avatar as much as these movies, but those are the two of the most successful movies ever, two, you know, hugely culturally relevant movies. Obviously my number one is Aliens. I like that world a lot and just such an awesome idea to, like, I'm gonna do a sequel to this as a guy who's had one hit, basically taking someone else's world and just changing the genre. And Sigourney's awesome in that movie, and James Horner's score is incredible. Love the new design stuff in the Alien Queen, and it's all so cool.
It's cool. Wild. It's wild, honestly, to think about how few movies he's made.
Also, I'll just say that while Ridley Scott kind of became like the director's cut guy, where, like, I'd say especially Blade Runner and Kingdom of Heaven are known for having, like, really good director's cuts that are way better than, the theatrical. James Cameron, I would say, is the opposite, where most of his movies have longer versions. I recommend the theatrical one of all of those movies, including T2 and Aliens. And I would assume Avatar, although I haven't seen the longer version of that.
So my number one's Terminator 2. I think it's not only one of the best action movies ever, I think it's just one of the greatest movies ever made. It's so freaking unbelievable. And yeah, it's got some corny moments. It maybe doesn't have as... Linda Hamilton's not as strong as a character in that as she is in number one and everything. But it also, too, to me, it feels like the first true, fully realized Cameron movie. And sure, all the themes in it, yeah, and everything about it are things that he revisits again and again now that he's sort of like the king of the world after making that. Like the whole idea, like if you watch that movie, the Terminator and Sarah Connor and John Connor essentially make a family with a divorced father and mother who hate each other, but like have to rally together to like take care of the kid, you know? And it's about like finding that love that's always in a family, no matter the circumstances. He revisits that theme and certainly in True Lies, and family's a huge thing in the Avatar movies. It feels like he's just kind of doing everything that he really cares about in that movie, but it all works so well, and it culminates in this, like, yeah, it's a long movie. What, it's like maybe 2 hours and 15 minutes? It might even be a little longer.
Yeah, I think the theatrical version's about that.
Yeah, like, but every second of it is just totally engaging. It's such a good movie.
Sweet. Well, let's do our other list, which is going to be a lot less grandiose, because the top three or four of James Cameron, you're literally talking about some of the best of their genres. But now we're going to talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger, Schwarzenegger without James Cameron, which, man, did that start to be a bottom of the barrel type situation real quick.
I would say top two movies I like a lot.
Can I start on this one?
Please.
Yeah.
My number five is Jingle All the Way. Now, hold on. I can already see that, as per usual, Road Warrior has my back a little bit.
It's just because you're such a big Rita Wilson fan.
It is one that I have a lot of... A lot of good memories of, because it is, we were of the time, right? It's got some fun stuff in it. Sinbad's doing his whole thing. Arnold's doing his whole thing. It's got some great quotes and whatnot in it. But in reality, I am going to find a way to put Phil Hartman into every top five that Phil Hartman can get into, because Phil Hartman kills in this movie. And it is one of the only times he's ever allowed to be a dude who's kind of a dick. And he's awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome in this movie. Just the same way that if we were to talk about Toy Soldiers, I would find a way to get him in there, because he's also fantastic in that. Or I shouldn't say he's a dick in this. He's quote the enemy. Like the father that Arnold wishes he was. But it's really fun, and it's my number five, because holy crap, you get to the bottom of those and it's a lot of not good movies.
It's the Max Wilcox Better Off Dead / Phil Hartman rule.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jingle All the Way is also my number five.
Oh, that makes me so happy. Yes.
No explanation needed, because you already said everything needs to be said.
Hell yeah.
All right, Will, moving on to you.
My number five is The Last Action Hero. Not really one of Shane Black's better movies, but I think maybe it kind of flopped. Also, John McTiernan movie. Got a little more shit upon than it deserved at the time. Kind of has sort of a cult classic, I think, now. It's goofy. It's a pretty fun movie. Charles Dance is the bad guy. Arnold makes fun of himself a little. It's a pretty good time. Also, just remembered, going back to True Lies for a second, that I feel like it's a kind of a pointed statement that when Captain Marvel crash lands into 90s LA and a Blockbuster Video, the first thing she does is shoot a poster of True Lies. I just remembered that. Yeah, Max, number four.
My number four is not a tumor. It's Kindergarten Cop. My list is a little wild. I'll be honest. The Kindergarten Cop,
it's a beloved movie to many.
Is not a good movie, but it is great and it is funny because it's Arnold having to deal with child actors. There's almost nothing funnier because he can barely deal with adult actors. Go watch that movie because all of us quote it because that quote is exceptionally quotable. It's cute. It's cute and it's fun. It's worthwhile.
I think the best part of Kindergarten Cop is the second time that one little boy says, boys have a penis and girls have a vagina. And then he does a little dance to celebrate saying his line again. my number four
I go second here.
Oh, yeah.
Or my number four is twins. Because twins. Why not?
Yeah.
You know, you got Danny DeVito. You got Arnold Schwarzenegger and they're playing twins. I haven't seen it in a while, but I've watched some other Schwarzenegger movies more recently, and I don't really like those, so I'm going to throw Twins in on the nostalgia factor.
Yeah.
Have you seen Commando recently? That's not a good movie.
Twins has Kelly Preston taking 40-year-old Arnold's virginity, so that's a good time.
Yeah.
What's your four?
My four is The Running Man, as the game show host says. We talked about it, I think, on our Extreme Sports list. Yeah, it's a fun time. Yaphet Kotto's in it. Again, Schwarzenegger says, Sub-Zero, now just Zero. So that's fun.
That was very fun. I'll jump straight in. My number three is also The Running Man for the same reasons. We don't have to talk about it. It's... like it is fun. It's not gonna change the world, but like it's a good time.
My number three is Total Recall. Pretty fun movie.
I love it. Yeah,
definitely, in the upper echelon of the non Cameron Schwarzenegger movies. There we go. That's it.
Okay. My number three is Commando. His character Schwarzenegger plays a guy called John Matrix. That's really awesome.
My top five. That alone disqualifies it.
That's so good. I love people calling him Matrix the whole time. His daughter is kidnapped and he destroys an island and all of its inhabitants to get her back, including a Dan Hedaya as a small. Dictatorship's Latin American leader.
Guys, there was a time when we just made video games movies. Like every one of every one of these like okay Arnold Schwarzenegger movies is the plot of like a mid-2000s AAA video game. It's wild.
Well, going back to Cameron for a sec, I feel like I should have mentioned in the Cameron conversation that I think maybe the best version of that, like, very simple, just like, not complicated action movie that's just kind of one guy against the world is, for me, Rambo First Blood Part 2, which James Cameron wrote before he directed Terminator.
There you go.
So good for him. That's a fun movie. I guess Max number... Also, Commando has the Joel Silver's made-up country of Val Verde, which he brings back for Die Hard 2 as the country that...
Oh, you're right!
That, what's-his-name, Django is coming from.
Wild.
Sick.
Same universe, wow.
Oh, yeah.
My number two is Predator.
Hell yeah.
I didn't grow up with it. I had to watch it later because I was raised V Mormon, and so like that was like a very... bloody, violent, yada yada, but it does have our highest ratio of governors in a movie, which is fun to think about.
Jesse Ventura
also in that one.
Also, Sonny Lambda, I think, tried to run for governor or senator or something.
Also, I fully respect our president, Carl Weathers. Hell yeah. I'm not even going to talk about it. It's Predator. It's awesome. Everyone should watch it.
My number two, Kindergarten Cop.
You're killing me, man.
It's actually a pretty good movie. It's funny.
I love you.
It's heartfelt.
I love you. You're killing me.
Like, say what you will about Schwarzenegger and his action movies and being so famous. Kindergarten Cop's actually one of the better movies he's in.
I agree.
In terms of just, like, firing on all cylinders. Like, he's well...
He's well cast. They use him correctly.
Yep. They use his, like, abilities as a comedian very, very well. And his, like, cop counterpart is super hilarious in it. The kids are really funny. They get great performances pretty much out of, like, a pretty big cast of kids. That movie rocks. It is so funny. And it's still funny to this day.
Yeah, that makes me so happy.
Yeah. Anytime you put Arnold in a place where it's like, why the hell is this guy here? It works.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's got one of my favorite lines of all time. Not so tough without your car, are you?
All right, what's your number two?
My number two is Predator. It should really be number one, but it's I think I might enjoy another movie a little bit more. It's really awesome. It's Predator. It changes genres half an hour in. It's really fun.
My number one has to be Total Recall. Gotta be. I would argue ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. I mean it's been remade, right? But like I kind of just wish we could go back and instead of remaking it, just somehow tweak it or change it, because like the things that make people laugh about it is just the special effects. It's awesome though, other than you know, whatever sort of BS stuff other than that you want to talk about.
Yeah, but there's also, it also exists, it's, you know, a year before T2 and before the kind of digital effects revolution begins. Yeah. And I love all the matte paintings and makeup, and when the, you know, old woman's face turns into Arnold, like that, and the, what's the guy's name, the face that's growing out of that guy's stomach is awesome.
Yeah.
Three on my list. I didn't want to say too much about it because I felt like, it's probably going to come higher for most. Probably could have been number two for me. It's a really cool movie. It's very forward thinking, and I got a feeling that could occupy a spot on your list too.
Possibly.
I get to go first. My number one's Predator. You guys have already talked about it. It's just a really fun movie. I think McTiernan is best as like an elite action director. Just a hair below Cameron or any of the other big dogs. Like, I think he's just a pretty competent, at times brilliant, director of action movies. So I love that movie. Some people laugh at it a little bit now, but it's still really cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think Predator is his, probably has to be Schwarzenegger's best movie without James Cameron. Yeah, Total Recall, I think, is my favorite. That's obviously my number one. I watched it again over the summer. It, like, Total Recall has maybe the potential to be the coolest movie in his filmography. There's stuff that obviously doesn't quite work and didn't quite come together and, you know, would have been interesting with a different lead actor. Maybe, you know, slightly improved script, but it's such a cool movie full of interesting and weird ideas and visuals. Schwarzenegger says, "See you at the party, Richter," and throws a guy's severed arms down an elevator shaft. It's awesome.
I think the one unifying theme of Schwarzenegger's career, though, is unless he's working with a really, really great director, he's not very good. And most of his movies are just garbage.
He is a tool that you have to use correctly, right? There are actors that you can throw at any role or at anything. He is not that, he is more specific and specialized, right? He is never going to absolutely blow you away emotionally, but you can tell really interesting stories because anything that he appears in, he's going to be a fish out of water in, which is really useful.
Also, I find it fascinating that there seemed to be a period during the 80s where just they decided that his thing was going to be to say, I'll be back in every movie. Like, he says that in Commando. I think he might say an I'll be back in Predator at some point. Or he says it in at least two movies that aren't Terminator. So that's really interesting. Yeah, okay. Let's
take this to a merciful end, though. Let's pick one out of the hat and call it a night.
Is it Freaky Friday starring Jamie Lee Curtis?
Oh, hell yes. Hell yes. It's Agent Cody Banks.
We did it. We did it, gents.
We did it.
All right.
I think there was only two things left in the bag, so you might want to refill that. The coffers were pretty low, but it is Agent Cody Banks this time.
Hell yeah. Let's do it. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Okay, good. It's... It looks like it's now streaming on Prime Video, so...
Oh, Lord.
None of us will have to pay $2 or $3.99 to watch this.
The embarrassment of paying for that movie and having that on my financial records would be enough to not watch it.
I only pay for Agent Cody Banks 2.
Destination London, yeah.
All right, everyone.
Cool. Well, thanks to everyone who listened to that. Check out our social media and everything, and we'll see you soon for an in-depth discussion of the 2002 or 2003 blockbuster hit Agent Cody Banks.